Welcome, MCU fans, to True Believers, the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Here on True Believers, we will discuss the Marvel Cinematic Universe as well as the related television and streaming shows on Disney+. We will also look at the connections that exist to the original Marvel comics and how they relate to the past, current, and future of the MCU universe. Of course, as always, before we get started into anything further, some mighty Marvel spoiler warnings ahead. We are going to be diving deep into episode 3 of What If the World Lost Its Mightiest Heroes, and we are diving so deep we're going to have spoilers everywhere. But you know what? I'm just a Kyle. I can't tackle the MCU and all of its sacred timelines and multiverses and whatever else is out there by myself. I need backup. The unfortunate thing is that apparently he got a UPS delivery of some kind, and it's kind of got me worried a little bit.
Hey, Kyle, what is this? It says yellow jacket suit. Is that something good? Should I put that on?
If I don't make it through the end of the episode, it's been nice knowing you. Hopefully one of my variants can take over next episode. Yes, my co-founder of the Fandom Podcast Network and my co-host here on True Believers, Mr. Kevin Reitzel, is here.
I'm excited, man. This episode went dark. It's going to be interesting to discuss.
This is going
to
be fun. This has got me leaning back to some old days of the original What If comics and how they used to be.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying the original What If comics went dark a lot? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, very much so. The What If comics were not exactly happy places, but we will get to that. First and foremost, Kevin, we got a big project coming up. Do you want to tell the people about it?
Yeah, we've decided, especially with all this new material, originally when we wanted to do the True Believers podcast, of course, we kind of rushed ourselves into it at the beginning with WandaVision, but we knew that one of the main goals we wanted to do was do a rewatch of the MCU universe. And a lot of other podcasts and people have usually done the theatrical release, but we thought it'd be more interesting to do the chronological release. And that one's a lot of fun. I've done that before by myself, and I really enjoyed that version of it and watching the timeline kind of come to be and how these movies fell into place that way. So that's what we're going to do. And we don't have a set schedule. We're going to fit them in whenever there's a lull with the movies and also the Disney Plus Marvel programming. And of course, we're going to start with Captain America, the First Avenger, and go from there. So,
looking forward to that. But it has been a huge week for the MCU. But before we even get to that, just a reminder, check out our great True Believers Facebook group. Join up. We have a lot of fun there. We talk about what's going on in the MCU. And of course, our Facebook group master, Mr. Dave Fielding, he does a great job with it. But I apologize if he's running around in a Captain Britain suit that might not fit quite right, Kevin.
Yeah, a little tight in the crotchal area, he says.
we'll see. But it's been a huge week for the MCU, Kevin. And it started actually kind of Sunday because... luckily this time it wasn't Tom Holland's fault, but there was a leak of the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer that hit that Sony was desperately trying to clean up before it got too far out there. And then after the leak Monday from CineCon, the actual trailer hit the airwaves, and Kevin, people are still raving about this trailer.
Yeah, when that kind of leak thing happened, I'm like, I don't want to watch it if it's from some guy's cell phone, blah blah blah. I don't want to do that. So I was like, okay, they're probably going to release the real trailer soon, and they did. And we'll talk about what Easter eggs we got out of it, because it was great to see, you know, Alfred Molina as Doc Ock and see one of the Green Goblin pumpkin bombs and stuff. That was great. But there was two things that came to my mind after I watched this and watched some reaction stuff to it. Is one, Kyle, is this the last time we're going to see, because of the agreement with Marvel and Sony, and Sony still owning the Superman property, is this the last time we're going to see Tom Holland as Spider-Man?
I don't think so, because actually in an article I read today on 411 Mania, they pulled an art interview with Tom Holland, and he was quoted as saying, this is just the tip of the iceberg for the Spider-Man franchise. I think Tom Holland is synonymous with Spider-Man right now, and he's so young that I think he wants to continue to do it. And truthfully, there's been a lot of rumors again, and I think it's partly because Venom is coming out and because the Spider-Man movie is coming out. that Disney is maybe looking at just either trying to buy Spider-Man back, or they might just buy Sony Studios themselves. And I mean, but let's be honest. It's welcome to the world of the content wars.
Yeah.
So I still wouldn't be surprised if that, plus some interesting rumors, nothing confirmed, that Venom might be pushed back to 2022 now with everything that's going on with COVID. Again, not confirmed. There's been some reports that it is for sure, but that is not confirmed. There's just a lot of interesting things, and I think Spider-Man is too important to the MCU. And the one thing I could see happening here, Kevin, is maybe Tom Holland does a couple Spider-Man movies just for Sony and like their Spider-Man universe they've been trying to set up, where they could actually have an excuse of how that would work with this multiverse aspect of maybe he ends up in that Sony Spider-Man universe at the end of this film.
They can have a way
to incorporate him at any other time back into the MCU because of the multiverse thing. So it's going to be interesting to see, but this trailer just had everybody talking.
Okay, hold on. I still have one more point I want to bring up before we get into like Easter eggs and stuff like that. Watching this movie, there's a part of me that feels like, okay, Tom Holland is awesome. Okay, he's great. Mm-hmm. But I'm ready for my Spider-Man to become a man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want to see Spider-Man grow up, and I want him, and maybe that'll happen in another film later on with just Sony and the Sony world, and, you know, whether he comes back to the MCU or not. But I'm kind of, because everything takes place in a certain time, he's still in high school and all that kind of stuff. But I want Tom Holland to continue to play him, but I want him to grow up a little bit. You know, I want him to not be the spider boy that we're seeing, the spider kid. And he's great at it, but I want him to mature more. And I want him to, whether it's diving into the classic Spider-Man villains again or whatever, I want to see him tackle that. I want to see Tom Holland get older with the character, and I want him to become a little bit more mature. I want the character of his Spider-Man to become more seasoned.
I think you will eventually see that if he sticks around. I think the Sony Marvel thing has kind of, there's a lot of interesting aspects to it, and I think it's one of the reasons why we haven't seen as many classic Spider-Man villains as of yet, because Sony has some plans for those as it stands right now. But that, trust me, I have a feeling that within 2 years, we could have everything changed on that. And I think it's really going to be, that's the interesting thing, and think, where is it going to play out between Sony and the MCU after this film? And I think that's going to be, I would love to see when they bring back the next Spider-Man movie, if they bring back Tom Holland, which I think you have to at this point, maybe jump it to at least get it to where we're doing Peter Parker stories from when Peter Parker was in college, because there's some great stories to pull from that time period as well. So I would really like that.
So regarding Easter eggs and stuff, did we see, I've been seeing all kinds of stuff, like the Doctor Strange is not the Doctor Strange we know. Is it a variant? Is it someone else pretending to be him? Is Matt Murdock going to be, Tom Holland's Spider-Man's,
attorney,
a court appointed, lawyer. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that came up. I watched a couple of those videos, and where it could mean with the whole alternate universe timeline, blah, 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 this and that. But what did you personally take from it?
Well, what I took was, if nothing else, they are incorporating every major villain, it looks like, that Sony has used in their movies. We've seen Doc Ock. We've seen at least hints of the Green Goblin with the pumpkin bomb in the trailer. Looks like there's a possible appearance of Sandman. There's like that big dust cloud. You see the lightning bolts, and we know Jamie Foxx is coming back to play Electro.
But are we going to be getting the other Spider-Man, Garfield and Tobey Maguire?
I think that they are going to keep a lid on whether that's going to happen until that movie comes out. I truly do believe that.
But the bigger question, will we get Mr. Evil Dead himself?
I don't think there's any Bruce Campbell in this one.
No Bruce Campbell? Okay, just
I know your love for Bruce Campbell, but no, there's just so much in this. I think it is Doctor Strange, because I think Kevin Feige has gone on record as saying this, that kind of what happens in WandaVision, what happens in Spider-Man Far From Home, and what happens in Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness. It's kind of a trilogy story. And we know the Scarlet Witch is involved heavily in Multiverse of Madness. I think Tom Holland might have an appearance in that film as well. And we did, they're just keeping a lid on that. I'm 50-50 on whether we actually see the other two Spider-Man or not. I think there's a higher possibility of Andrew Garfield showing up over Tobey Maguire. Because I think Andrew Garfield would be more down for it at this point.
What about Vulture? No one's talking about Vulture.
That's where...
That was just kind of a thread that was hanging out there at the end of the first movie.
And it's the movie's been forgot about because it's been moved back so much. But they do have the Morbius film coming out, which is another Spider-Man villain, Morbius the Living Vampire. And if you remember in that trailer, Michael Keaton's Vulture character is in that trailer.
I forgot about that, to be honest with you.
The rumors are there is one character that looks like they're kind of shadowed in the dark, and it's there's speculation that it could be the Lizard from the first Amazing Spider-Man film, or it could be possibly even Tom Hardy as Venom to start some of that possibility.
How cool is that Michael Keaton has played an iconic DC hero as Batman? He's returning as that Batman in the Flash movie, and then he gets to play a villain in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, and a very cool version of that villain, I might say.
Yes, he was great.
So, Kevin,
well, that's I'm hoping we'll probably get one more trailer before
my guess is we get a second trailer when Eternals drops.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
So, well, let me ask you this: excitement level after this first trailer, Kevin?
I'm excited. I don't know why, but Shang-Chi is. I'm more excited about that for some reason. I think guess
because you're like me. We both like that kung fu movie.
Action. Yeah, but I also like the fact that it's a new hero to the universe, and I want to see how they tie it in. I want to see how they tie it in even more with the supposed two credit scenes that we're going to get, at least according to John Campia, who works for, I think, Entertainment Weekly, I think. I can't remember. But big movie guy and movie reviewer guy. But yeah, I mean, it's MCU. So I'm excited about that. I'm more excited about those two trailers, the Spider-Man and Shang-Chi, than I am the Eternals right now.
Can I make a prediction here while we're at this point?
Mm-hmm.
You have two stingers in Shang-Chi. I'm willing to bet money Jonathan Majors is one of those stingers.
In Shang-Chi?
In Shang-Chi. And I do believe...
Why do you say that? Why do you say that he'd be in that one?
I think he's in one of the stingers because I think Kang's going to start popping up in every MCU movie until they do get to the finale of what that storyline is going to be.
Yeah, I guess they do have to start laying the seeds for him as the main villain after what we saw in Loki. And I just hope that we get a better version of it.
Well, I think...
I guess I'm on an island alone, Kyle. Everyone is loving Jonathan Majors' Loki appearance, and I am not having it. I don't like his version, I'm on that. And I'm not jumping off that island. I'm staying on that island. I'm hoping that we get a better version of Kang in the teasers and in eventually.
We're going to get a lot of different versions of Kang before it's all said and done. I'm just telling you that right now. So don't be surprised if the next time we see Kang and then the time after that, he's totally different. But I also do think we're going to see Jonathan Majors in Spider-Man Far From Home as well.
God, if you listen to the Ringer network, man, they're just like putting up his performance like it is a multi-Oscar winner. And I'm like,
I liked it. I'm not going to lie. But I also, I really do think it's familiarity with the Kang character too, which you don't have per se.
True. This is very, very true.
I think it's that there. Apparently I talked about Kang too much and he messed with my timelines because I just got a little technical difficulty here at True Believers because I just got booted out of the Zoom.
Welcome back. What were you saying?
No, I just think, my point was, is I think it's a lot of it is just familiarity with Kang. And that I think once you get a little more familiar with the character.
Yeah, I don't know the comics, so that's why. And I guess people that are familiar with Kang and get it are more excited about it than I am. So I'm not saying I'm excited about Kang. I'm just not excited about how we were introduced to him in the MCU with Loki. Yeah. I just wanted to see something a little bit different. So,
well, Kevin, with all that's going on, we got Shang-Chi right around the corner, only a couple of weeks away. Can't wait for that. Not that far from Eternals either, but you know what? What we have right now in front of us is What If. And this has been a very interesting ride for these first three episodes. And Kevin, I'm really excited to talk about this episode because this is the first of these What If episodes that really reminds me of the classic What If comic. And I'll explain why once we get talking about the episode. But Kevin, as always, this is True Believers. We don't do things like a traditional podcast around here. So please explain to all these wonderful Marvel Universe fans how we do things here at True Believers.
Yeah, we're a podcast, usually have segments. We don't have segments. This is a Marvel MCU podcast. We've got phases, and we got four of them, starting off with the plot description, our reactions, and talking about the cast. Phase two, we've got some trivia. Phase three, we've got the deep dive into the plot analysis and any ties to the MCU and comics. And we close out with phase four with our final thoughts and what's happening next week. So we are talking about, this is MCU True Believers podcast, episode 26, but we're talking about What If the World Lost Its Mightiest Heroes, episode 3 of the What If series. And we're going to dive right into the plot description. Over the course of a week, S.H.I.E.L.D. director Nick Fury attempts to recruit heroes for the Avengers Initiative, but they are each mysteriously killed. Natasha Romanoff gives Tony Stark an injection to alleviate his hangover, but it proves fatal. S.H.I.E.L.D. detains Romanoff, but Fury helps her escape so that she can find the killer. Meanwhile, Thor arrives on Earth. When he attempts to retrieve Mjolnir, he accidentally is shot and killed by Barton. S.H.I.E.L.D. apprehends Barton, who dies in their custody. To analyze what killed Stark, Romanoff approaches Dr. Betty Ross, who finds out that nanotechnology was involved. Fury deduces that Romanoff and Bruce Banner are the killer's remaining targets. Romanoff discovers Banner hiding in Ross's classroom, but Ross's father, General Thaddeus Ross, confronts Banner and Romanoff. Banner is shot and transforms into the Hulk to attack General Ross's men before suddenly exploding. Asgard forces led by Loki arrive on Earth to avenge Thor's death. They attack S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, but Fury negotiates a temporary truce so that he can identify the killer. Romanoff discovers that Janet Van Dyne, who is believed to be dead, recently accessed the Avengers Initiative files. Romanoff is then murdered, though not before she transmits a message to Fury revealing the key to finding the killer is hope. Fury realizes that Romanoff was referring to Hope Van Dyne, the daughter of Hank Pym / Ant-Man, who had a falling out with S.H.I.E.L.D. due to Van Dyne's death in the line of duty as an agent. Pym had built a yellow jacket suit and used it and other nanotechnology to commit the murders. Realizing Pym is the killer, Fury proposes an alliance with Loki to stop him. At Hope's grave, Fury is confronted by Pym. Fury and Loki defeat Pym, who is taken to Asgardian custody. With most of the would-be Avengers dead and unable to stop him, Loki chooses to stay on Earth to subjugate humanity, quickly becoming its ruler. Elsewhere, Fury finds Steve Rogers / Captain America frozen in ice and is greeted by Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel. All right, Kyle, first reactions.
This was dark, man.
Our heroes were getting killed.
This was dark, but I absolutely love this because as it felt like so much like a What If comic. Because in the 70s, when What If first came out, it usually didn't end well for the heroes. It usually wasn't a real satisfying ending of a What If comic. It was something goes wrong and the villain wins, or there's just... or it's just a bad ending sometimes, or it's an ending that leaves you not feeling fully satisfied. But that was the idea of the What If comic. And I think that this episode is the first episode of the three to truly capture the spirit of that comic version of What If. And to see how they killed the creative ways and where they killed off the Avengers, and to have everything that happened, especially having Hank Pym as Yellow Jacket, because if you're a comic fan, you know that Hank Pym as Yellow Jacket is a really dark time in Hank Pym's story, because that's when he kind of loses his mind and does some things that aren't real nice.
Well, we're going to dive in a little bit more in phase three, so hold all your comments for that. I found it, it was interesting how they were being killed off. Of the deaths, which one was like more gruesome or surprising to you?
The Hulk exploding.
Yeah, from inside with his heart. Yeah. I thought the Thor getting killed that was a pretty big one too.
I thought they telegraphed that one. I think I was more shocked with killing Tony like that.
Right.
I wasn't kind of expecting it to go that way. And especially from when you first see it to what they say is the reason, I thought they did a really good job with that.
Yeah. 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 It was definitely went dark. I liked it for that reason. And it was great to see Sam Jackson back as, of course, Fury and having a major role in that. You have any thoughts on the cast? So here's interesting. So we got Samuel Jackson is Nick Fury. Michael Douglas was Hank Pym. But as Natasha Romanoff, we had Lake Bell. Forgetting who Lake Bell. I'm sorry. Lake Bell, of course, is in the Harley Quinn series, plays a main character in there as well. Tony Stark, though, was not voiced by who we know is Tony Stark, of course, is Robert Downey Jr., is Mick Wingert. Clark Gregg did return as Agent Phil Coulson. Frank Grillo returned as Brock Rumlow and Jeremy Renner as Clint. We had Stephanie Panicello as Betsy Ross. We had Mark Ruffalo returning as Bruce Banner. Tom Hiddleston, of course, as Loki. And Jamie Alexander as Lady Sif. That was nice. But for Carol Danvers / Captain America, it was Alexandra Daniels. Who did the voice for that? And Michael Patrick McGill did the voice of General Ross. What are your thoughts on the cast?
This was the first one where we really didn't have the big names in it as far as across the board like we've had for the most part. But one, Clark Gregg, anytime he's playing Agent Coulson, I'm a happy person. I love him as Agent Coulson. Obviously, Sam Jackson, amazing as Nick Fury. I was actually surprised Michael Douglas came in and did a voice. I liked Lake Bell as Natasha Romanoff. A lot of people are trying to make this big deal that she did the voice instead of Scarlet because of everything that's going on with Marvel. This was recorded well before all that stuff happened. So
yeah. And also I forgot that I was trying to remember it was Lake Bell that she does the voice for Ivy in the very funny Harley Quinn.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
She's really good in that.
Of course, Ruffalo, always great. Great to hear Jamie Alexander. I think the one, though, that really I had a hard time with was Stephanie Panicello as Betsy Ross. Just something about her voice didn't fit the character to me.
Right.
But otherwise, phenomenal. I mean, Nick Fury and Sam Jackson are synonymous. I don't think you can have anybody else voice Nick Fury at this point.
I have an episode review here IR... M online, and they said that love how that despite the dark in this episode, Nick Fury didn't really make any mistakes apart from not catching on quicker. And then at the end, his plan causes things to be 10 times worse, though I'm not sure those non-Thor Asgardians could actually overrun Earth's military forces in one day, but it worked for the episode itself. I'm also pretty sure that when they do a sequel to this in season two, with Cap fighting back, that those Asgardians are going to get their ass whooped. The change of tone was fun, and so far I'm having fun watching What If Season 1, and this reviewer gave it an A- grade. Kyle, do you think, compared to the three that we've seen so far, where does this one rank?
I'd put it at 2. I think as we've gone, and this is just personal preference, I still think last week's episode with T'Challa as Star-Lord was just absolutely a blast, and just so wonderfully done. I'd put this at 2 just because for me, it reminds me so much more of the comic, and with the Agent Carter being the third of 3 really good episodes. So, I mean, this is like, but just, I think I go, the thing with the Agent Carter thing for me is, again, is it was so tied to the constraints of the first Captain America film, where these other two have been able to incorporate things, but explore the greater universe. So, I just want to address something he talks about. Oh, coming back to this Earth in season 2. I think people need to realize that What If stories, it was very rare for What If to ever go back to a universe, the same universe again. It was rare to get sequels. So
Right, right. Well,
don't be expecting.
I have a question about that in phase three. So I'll bring that to it. But I thought it was interesting that this reviewer said that, though, for that reason. But before phase three, we got phase two. We got some trivia here. This story was inspired by Fury's Big Week, a limited series comic book published in 2012 that served as a tie-in to Phase 1 of Marvel Cinematic Universe. It explained how the events of Iron Man 2 in 2010, The Incredible Hulk in 2008, and Thor in 2011 were happening at the same time, hence the title cards featuring the days of the week in between scenes. I did kind of like that. It was like Monday.
That kind of made it interesting Wednesday. When you think about a rewatch, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I like how they kind of tied everything a lot closer together, and I thought that was kind of cool. This episode references events from the films of Phase 1, of course, Iron Man 2, Captain America, The Incredible Hulk, events from Iron Man, Ant-Man, and, of course, Captain America, Winter Soldier. Hank Pym uses the Yellow Jacket suit in his confrontation with Nick Fury and Loki in San Francisco. He also dons a suit to kill the main members of the Avengers Initiative as retribution for the death of his daughter Hope. In the main timeline, the Yellow Jacket was used by Darren Cross in Ant-Man 2015, but in the original comic books, Pym was the original Yellow Jacket, a new identity he took on when he became emotionally unstable. The page beeper Nick Fury uses to contact Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel's, in the post-credit scene of Avengers Infinity War, reappears in this episode, however, utilizes it about 8 years sooner due to the unforeseen events regarding the death of the Avengers. He originally used it to contact Danvers when he recognized the events of the snap was occurring. He literally, was like fading away in ash as he punched up that button. Yeah,
I want to bring this up real quick.
Coulson was like, is that a pager?
I actually loved how they used the pager. How like he grabs it and you know he's thinking about using it and then it hits him what's going on and he holds off on using it. I really kind of liked that like that little tease. And then when we see what happens at the end, it's very obvious he was going to use it. And of course, we do see Captain Marvel at the end of the episode.
Yeah, yeah. All right, before we head into phase three and get into our deep plot analysis and ties to the MCU and comics, first, we're going to take a break from our True Believers MCU discussion and let you know what other great podcasts are here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood of Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom. All right, welcome back to True Believers Marvel MCU Podcast. This is episode 26, What If the World Lost Its Mightiest Heroes? Episode 3. All right. This is phase three. We're diving deep into the plot analysis ties to the MCU and comics. So you kind of allude to it earlier, Kyle. What does this What If episode, what similarities, if any, What If comics does it have? And you were mentioning that there was a lot of these kind of dark comics, you know, what if people died and blah, blah, blah. Is there a particular one that you remember where the Avengers were affected in this way?
Oh, there's been several where they've had the Avengers get wiped out. There was one where, like, what if the Masters of Evil had killed the Avengers or defeated the Avengers? So several along those lines. But what I liked in this, again, was they took some aspects of the comics and applied them to this. First and foremost, we talked about it. Hank Pym is Yellow Jacket. In the comics, there's a point where Hank Pym basically has a mental snap. And he becomes Yellow Jacket.
Okay, real quick. So that leads me to the next question here. Mm-hmm. Is he had the Ant-Man suit. Why didn't he just use the Ant-Man suit, referring to this comic? Why did he make this new Yellow Jacket thing?
Well, the Yellow Jacket suit was basically like he had improved the abilities, and he wanted to take on a new identity because when he had this emotional breakdown, he almost became like split personalities.
Do you remember what caused the breakdown?
Because in this one,
apparently it's the death of his daughter.
Yeah, right. He was having marital problems with Janet Van Dyne, or Janet Pym at the time. And just a lot of stress from things. And they think it was also a side effect of Pym particle use at the time. So what ended up happening in the comics was he just became this like very cocky, very just a jerk, basically. And it culminated with him actually hitting Janet, his wife, in the comics, which then he betrays the Avengers, does some evil things, teams up with a couple of villains for a short period of time. They finally catch him. They kick him out of the Avengers. It leads to several years down the line in the new West Coast Avengers title that came out of the comics, where they kind of did a redemption of Hank Pym's storyline. But he's had a very interesting run because of that. But Yellow Jacket for Hank Pym, for the most part, represents a really bad time for Hank Pym.
So when we are introduced to the Yellow Jacket with Darren Cross in the first Ant-Man film, was that based on other comics as well? Was Darren Cross a real character?
And Darren Cross is a brief.
When did Scott Lang come into the comics?
Scott Lang came into the comics. It was after Hank Pym had stopped being Ant-Man. After Hank Pym had basically stopped being Ant-Man, and after all the thing that happened with Yellow Jacket, he came across an Ant-Man suit. Kind of started off as a little bit of a criminal, but then realized error of his ways, very much kind of like in the movie, and became a hero and is still a
hero.
You're
talking about Scott Lang, not Hank
Pym. Scott Lang, yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So he kind of became Ant-Man when Hank Pym stopped being a superhero.
And then how did Darren Cross come into the comics?
He wasn't near the impact that was. He was never Yellow Jacket or anything like that. He was one of Hank Pym's assistants that went bad, but never really. Okay. Anything major from that.
So the MCU decided to take that character and make him a villain with and him developing the Yellow Jacket.
One of the other things I really liked, and you have this in the notes, Kevin, I've talked about this before. You've asked me about The Watcher and how in the comics, if some major events are happening, The Watcher kind of, people can see him. They can tell he's there. They kind of played with that a little bit in this episode with his silhouette over a few different scenes. Yeah. And I really like that because they were showing the impact of these characters dying.
Did we see that in the two previous episodes?
We
the
have Watcher not doing seen, that? We have not seen that.
So why did they pop it up in this one?
I think because of the significance of these characters dying.
Interesting. I thought it was really cool, especially that desert driving scene. And I think it's Coulson going out to New Mexico or whatever it was. And then we see him again later on. But I'm wondering why we hadn't seen the Watcher overlooking this different universe like we did in the first two episodes.
Yeah,
did we just not notice it? I don't know.
I don't think he was, but I think they did it because of the impact of people dying in this episode. And I think it just felt this felt more like a traditional What If episode.
Right.
So I think that was the main thing.
So I got a question for you because I was watching, I think it was watching Screen Crush. I like those guys. Ryan Neary does a good job of pointing out, Easter eggs and in trailers and, you know, stuff. And he's been covering, obviously, the MCU Disney Plus series. And he asked the question, is Loki more involved with the death of our heroes than was let on? Which gave him a very convenient reason to come to Earth and then eventually take it over. Was he able to manipulate Hank Pym in a way to get him to do his dirty work for him?
I don't think so. I think they really did play up on the fact Hank Pym was so emotionally imbalanced and by the death of his daughter, and that's something in Hank Pym's history we're used to.
But hold on. Okay, hold on here, though. With the Loki that we know of in Avengers, the original film, mm-hmm. he's power hungry. I don't think that he would take the death of his brother in a personal way to where not only did he want to find the killer, but he's also going to use that to take over Earth. I don't think he needed the death of his brother to push him over to want to take over Earth. That would have happened eventually, just like it did in Avengers.
But I don't think Loki pulled any strings on Hank Pym. I think Loki comes to Earth because of the death of his brother and then sees the opportunity there.
Okay.
That's kind of how I feel. I felt about it. At first I was thinking maybe this is Loki doing this, you know, maybe he's the one who made Clint, you know, lose the arrow to kill right. Thor and stuff like that. But no, I think how they explained it with Hank Pym makes a lot of sense. And I think Loki just taking advantage of the situation.
Okay. So my last question for you, unless you got anything else you want to add, but I think this is a question that we should ask at the end of our phase three here for the What If episodes going forward is, and we touched on it earlier, what the reviewer said is, and we're not expecting sequels to these certain What Ifs. There's a possibility they might do it a second season. There's rumors about it. Who knows? But let's ask a fun question, Kyle. What does the sequel of this episode go to from here? Because we got Loki taking over the world, and then we've got S.H.I.E.L.D. And Sam Jackson, you know, as Fury going in and waking up Cap from his capsicle, and Carol Danvers showing up. So who are the new Avengers? What happens? How do they deal with this?
Okay, so first of all, let's address the sequel thing. Like I said, it's rare for What If to have a sequel. It did happen on occasion. An interesting aspect, I've talked about the Exile series on here, which was kind of like probably the most modern version of What If. There was interesting because they would go back.
Whoa. I'm sorry. A modern version of What If? Exiles? What?
Exiles was basically What If with a different title. Okay. I've talked about this on our other episodes.
Yeah, I don't remember it.
Yeah. Anyway, the idea of Exiles was it was a group of out-of-time heroes that were traveling through different timelines. Okay. And they would go back and revisit some of the timelines that people found very popular. So more with that, they did kind of sequel episodes there. Here, though, I could see where you could see – I could easily see another Agent Carter What If. Another What If with storyline with Agent Carter. I don't think they'll do anything with Star-Lord T'Challa just because of the Chadwick situation. Here, I think this is one they leave hanging, but if you're going to do a sequel with this, Kevin, then this is where it gets fun to speculate. Obviously, you have Captain America, you have Captain Marvel, Nick Fury's involved. I think Black Panther gets involved at some point because you know Wakanda's probably just in hiding and can't be found.
Yeah, because Wakanda's not going to sit back and let Loki take over the world here.
Yeah, I think you could have the Guardians show up.
Okay.
Right. You know, Star-Lord decides to return to Earth. And some other heroes that haven't been introduced yet. Spider-Man could show up. Things like War Machine. War Machine could still show up. So there's Avengers to be had there.
Right.
But it would be a fun thing. I think what it would be really interesting to see what Marvel does if there's any of these that really, really hit. That if they don't try to do this like some spin-off series of these. Where it's the show, like maybe a 6-episode show based off of a character they've introduced in What If or a storyline they've introduced in What If, an expanded version of it.
Before we close out with phase four, anything in phase three of this episode that stand out to you or anything that you want to bring out?
I just think they did a phenomenal job once again of channeling what to me and a lot of the comic readers is this has felt like a really true What If story. And you know what? I got to give them credit, and I've seen a few people on social media credit, that they actually included the Incredible Hulk in this movie as part of, and scenes from that as part of this What If.
That's an excellent point, actually, because the Incredible Hulk is kind of the redheaded stepchild, so to speak, when it comes to the MCU universe, you know, and the fact that, you know, that wasn't, the guy that plays Bruce Banner now.
Edward Norton, Mark Ruffalo, yeah.
Mark Ruffalo, that wasn't his film, but yet that was his voice and his version in the film, or in this episode.
I think the other thing this did, Kevin, is it answered a question for a lot of people of which do you watch first, Iron Man 2 or Incredible Hulk? I think this kind of revealed you need to watch Iron Man. If you're doing it in chronological, you watch Iron Man 2, then you watch Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, because Iron Man 2, because in Incredible Hulk, when you see the end credit scene, it's obvious that Iron Man is going to be going along with the Avengers initiative. And in Iron Man 2, he's not part of that yet, as alluding to the famous donut scene. Mm-hmm. That, by the way, that made me hungry for donuts. I want to go buy Randy's Donuts and get some donuts again.
There you go.
All right, let's head into Phase 4. We're going to close things out here. So any final thoughts on this, Kyle? I mean, I'm enjoying the series. I'm enjoying the animation. I love seeing a majority of the original Avengers actors lending their voice talents to this. I'm very curious where they're going to go with this. It kind of feels like a safe way to rewrite Avengers MCU as we now know it, in very creative ways. We've gone dark. We've gone light and kind of funny with T'Challa being Star-Lord. I'm very curious how they're going to rewrite different timelines in this. It almost kind of feels like this Watcher might come up again in actual live action MCU movies with the whole Kang the Conqueror and all the stuff with the time stuff. I mean, how are these what ifs going to tie into the live action, if any, Kyle? What do you think?
I think what they're doing is I think anything we see in this what if series, and let's address this now. We're a third of the way into this series, and I think a lot of people kind of have, it's an animated series. It's not going to be of any significance. But with what happened at the end of Loki, I think it really is massive significance to the MCU. I mean, it is canon. Kevin Feige has said, this is canon. These things are going to matter. And I think it's setting up where there's a very distinct possibility we see some of these realities in Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness. Even if they're just brief appearances.
In the Quantum Verse with Kang the Conqueror making his final or his first major appearance as a villain, right?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of possibilities here. And like I said, I think this is a fun testing ground for Marvel to have some fun with some of these things. I do believe we will get a second season of What If at some point. I think this has been a bigger hit than what even they had planned on it being. And I think the biggest thing is that you have these actors willing to come and do this animated project.
And it's going to be an interesting question to ask when this first season is done, is of all of the what ifs, which of these would you like to actually see recreated? Not the story, but a character from it recreated in live action. And so far, I would love to see Hayley Atwell as Captain Carter. That would be fun.
I think that's still the consensus number one. I think if Chadwick was still with us, I think people would probably say Chadwick is Star-Lord, but
that would be so fun. Seriously, it's so sad that we lost him, Kyle. Can you imagine him now, if he was alive, what he would be doing with social media when that episode came out? You know, could he be standing with like Chris Pratt and throwing on his Star-Lord jacket or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
Opportunities were missing because we lost Chadwick, man.
Well, no, think about this. Think about how many people would be trying to break onto the set of Black Panther 2 if Chadwick was still alive.
I know. Yeah.
It's just, I'm looking forward to Black Panther 2, but that's going to be a tough watch. I'm going to be honest with you right now. That's going
to
be a
It's going to be watch. Interesting to see how they deal with that. We still have no idea how they're going to deal with that. So, yeah.
But as far as this episode goes, again, I love this episode. I love the feeling of the classic What If. I'm hoping we have more episodes like this. I do not know. They have not said what the title of next week's What If is yet, but I, from what I am hearing, it will be a What If involving Doctor Strange. So
you just sold the end lead there, dude. I had that at the end of the episode. What's next?
Well, but I think after the No Way Home trailer, but when with Doctor Strange, we know we'll get to that. But after No Way Home, anything can happen. So,
all right, close this out, man.
Okay, well, of course, you know, this is True Believers here on the Fandom Podcast Network. And again, check out our fandom group on Facebook. We do a lot of fun things there. Of course, you can subscribe to us and all of our great podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. We also have a YouTube channel. Give us a subscribe there to search for the Fandom Podcast Network. You can also contact us via Facebook at our Fandom Podcast Network page. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, or on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can find me traversing through the multiverse on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Kevin, wait, what timeline are you in? Where can people find you in the sacred timeline?
That's a good question. I have no idea. I got the Tesseract, though. Maybe that can help me. you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
I got to throw in a side note, too. I didn't realize that our good friend Adam O'Brien, who hosts Lethal Mullet, is actually Mobius. Because if you see some pictures of him recently on a jet ski.
Nice.
Of course, there are a couple great ways to support the Fandom Podcast Network and the True Believers Podcast. First and foremost, it is here. We have the True Believers shirt up on TeePublic along with other great gear. Go to teepublic.com, search either for the Fandom Podcast Network or type in True Believers. You will find it there. We've got a beautiful shirt representing the colors of True Believers.
You can put that on any apparel, anything that TeePublic provides. You can put that awesome True Believers logo on there.
Absolutely. Sure, check it out. Absolutely. And of course, we love the reviews, especially on Apple Podcasts and iTunes. The 5-star reviews are wonderful, but we love the feedback in general because, as always around here, we're trying to feed your ears with better podcasts. Now, Kevin, before we talk about the next episode, it's time for some Excelsior points for you. Ooh. Now, I've been debating this because it's, you know, it was kind of a dark episode of What If. I mean, if we're gonna go balance, these might be like negative Excelsior points.
Oh, I mean, but I owe you some. You gotta take some back from me.
I don't know. The Spider-Mobile's looking pretty sharp, but I would take the Thanos copter, but you got orange soda all over it. Did you let Michael Morris ride in it or something like that?
Wow, you brought up Michael Morris and orange soda. That's been a long time. Dug that one up quick.
Well, you know, alternate timelines. No, actually, Kevin, I'm going to award you 3 Excelsior points this week. And with that, are you going to bank them, or do you want to see what you get out with your 3 Excelsior points?
You know, I'm going to bank them. Okay. Just remember that I got 3, so let's see if I earn more next time and see what else I can get.
Okay, well, we'll see about that. And I mentioned it earlier, and Kevin was upset with me, but hey, I get excited. It's the MCU. I don't know.
Yeah, you didn't read you didn't read the end of the notes. That's
what happened. No, I just get excited because it looks like we are looking at some Doctor Strange and What If, maybe fighting an evil version of himself.
This is actually interesting, Kyle, because if we are getting a What If with Doctor Strange. I mean, I'm only pulling and I say in question mark because when I was hitting on IMDb, they show an image of Doctor Strange doing something, but we don't know if he's going to be the focus of this. But if he is, Kyle, this will be interesting because we're getting a What If with him, but then we're also getting his movie and his participation and appearance in Spider-Man with the multiverse stuff going on. So what the heck are they going to do with him? In What If is going to be interesting.
Well, I just want to know, is he going to be wearing the sweatshirt or is he going to be wearing his normal? I do want an explanation. Let's rewind this for just a second. I do want an explanation of why everything was frozen over in the Sanctum Sanctorium.
Oh, in the Spider-Man trailer? Yeah, that's a good question. I can only assume in the Sanctorium or whatever it's called, But there's a lot of stuff like that happening with all the spells that they're practicing. I mean, I got to assume that, you know, him and Wong are learning new spells to protect and do stuff with. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to find out if that was actually the real Steven.
Well, yeah, I mean, he seems awful quick to go to a spell that Wong tells him not to do. So, yeah, the Mephisto trolls are already out there. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah, I'll see it when I believe it. I'll see it when I believe it. Or no, wait, I'll believe it when I see it.
could it be possible that Wong is transporting himself to some sort of magical superpowered ultimate fighting contest?
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's got to head over to Shang-Chi. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that, it's been a great show. It's been fun to talk about some classic What If and a feeling of classic What If here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Kevin, it could stay dark for a while. I'm just going to say this now. I'm forewarning you because we do have Marvel Zombies coming. I'm just saying that they are coming to What If. They're in the poster. You can see them. So, but with that, thank you everybody for listening. And as always around here, Excelsior to you all, and make ours Marvel.